Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Indie Football Podcast, your award-nominated, possibly future award-winning, if we get enough votes, favorite football podcast. It is a busy Monday today, a hell of a Sunday yesterday, and of course, that means that on my own, I would be helpless. Instead, I've got Miguel Delaney, the chief football writer of The Independent, alongside me. Miguel, hello.
Hello.
And I also have Jack Pitbrook.
Hi, Ed.
Both of those guys were at big games yesterday, as was I. So I think, without further ado, we'll get onto the games.
Yeah.
The big one, Man United-Chelsea. I think we went into this game, Miguel, saying Antonio Conte's future's in a little bit of doubt. The internal power play that he tried for in the summer summarily failed. Jose Mourinho coming into this game trying to catch up with Pep Guardiola. Instead, we get a 1-0 win for Chelsea, which kind of separates the top four a little bit from the rest, actually. But what were your main takeaways from what was a... I mean, people said it was an entertaining game. I thought it burnt slowly, was a bit bitty, but settled by a very good goal,
yeah.
I thought.
Well, the main takeaway is that I think it killed the title race. 8 points.
You think it's done already, yeah?
Well, there's never been a lead, or there's never been a gap between first and second like that since the Premier League was founded. I'd have to go back looking through the stats, which sounds like a fun afternoon.
Yeah.
if I want to go pre-Premier League. I thought, once again, in a big game, United actually started well, but once again, Mourinho's tactics in a match like this were found wanting and functional and basic.
Well, we were expecting a super defensive look from him. In the first 10 minutes, there were a surprising amount of chances, but then he kind of tightened it up.
Yeah, well, it was like he went for it initially, and then he saw that because of how they were trying to mark Ander Herrera. They left midfield completely free. Sorry, Mark Eden Hazard. They left midfield completely free, and Bakayoko was through three times in the first 10 minutes, something like that. So Mourinho, of course, reverted, shored up. And then United were caught in some kind of strange halfway house then where they needed to win, but obviously he didn't want to cough up all these chances. Then, eventually, of course, once again, the one creative player, Mkhitaryan, was sacrificed, although, to be fair, he's not playing well. But that, in a system, doesn't really suit him. Having gone behind, after that defence was kind of typically a hole open for Morata, the response was just stick Fellaini up there and boot balls towards him. And, like, you have to offer a bit more. But, to be fair, we shouldn't overlook Chelsea because I think, once again, this season, just when it looked like they're going to have a 2015-16 campaign, they showed the resolve that they didn't have that season. And I actually thought Chelsea were much better valued for this win than a 1-0.
It was a big win for them. I mean, you've got to look at it like, bearing in mind that if he lost, then Conte was genuinely a guy who it wouldn't have surprised that if today he was gone.
Yeah.
Because there is some sort of fraught power battle within the club, and he has annoyed the powers that be. I think we saw, as I say, Chelsea be impressive. Mkhitaryan has got a lot of criticism, Jack. And I think it's harsh because he's been asked to play a role which is just so alien to him. But I do think there is an argument, and I actually thought this when he was replaced by Martial. I thought, wow, we're going to see Lukaku, Rashford and Martial. I think they've only played together for a very short period this season as a three. We saw that for half an hour, but there was no flowing football. There was nothing. It was, as Miguel says, just throwing the ball up to Fellaini and hoping.
I think it was certainly one of those moments where the difference between Jose and the other top five big six coaches is most obvious, in the sense that they almost always seem to have more precise, more imaginative, more effective plans when it comes to trying to score a goal against a good defence, which is basically, like, you know, the hardest thing to do in football and therefore the most important. And yeah, you're right. Like, Mkhitaryan, like a lot of clever, creative players in that team, looks a bit wasted. He certainly looks like a player who would be better off playing for one of those other teams, with the possible exception of Arsenal.
Well, I was talking to a few people yesterday, and it was raised, like, I mean, can you imagine the frustration of Mkhitaryan even beyond that system? Like, You see Kevin De Bruyne probably going to be player of the season. Every time he gets on the ball, he has at least three options. Everything, there's so much swirling around him, he can pick out passes. Mkhitaryan gets the ball, runs towards, and what does he have in front of him? Lukaku, who's about 30 yards away, and his touch is suspect anyway. And I think there is a bigger issue in this game, maybe in terms of Lukaku and Morata, that we could do a piece on. But yeah, and so I think I've a lot of, you know, I think, you know, United fans have been watching, have been complaining about Mkhitaryan's work rate and all that and how he kind of pulls out. But I think when you're in a situation where everything you do is tankless, that kind of, you see that seep into players' games a lot then. Kind of, there's this futility to it.
I think, especially when you bring on someone like Martial, and he did nothing. He really just didn't have an opportunity to do anything because the ball was going long to Lukaku, actually, who I worked out as, must be like 500 minutes now without a goal for Manchester United, which is a concern in its own.
You know, once again, did a piece after the Benfica game. It had been the second game without a goal. And so there are worrying signs there. Got hammered by United fans. But, you know,
what were the signs?
Not that you're bitter about it. But
well, you could see it in basically because the first few games, as we pretty much discussed in this podcast at the start of the season, there was an element of illusion about United because they just cut open against poor teams that were 1-0 down against them.
Like Swansea when they were 1-0 up and then ended up winning 4-0,
yeah,
I think.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, you see, the problem with Lukaku, again, as we've discussed, Mourinho doesn't give his team as much specific attacking direction. So it is up to the players to work it out themselves. And I think Lukaku is still too, he's not a complete enough striker yet to really benefit from that. I think he would have benefited much more from going to Chelsea because Conte would have told him exactly what to do, what runs he needs to make, where he needs to be. Whereas with United, he's kind of just floundering now, and it's affecting his confidence.
He didn't. The thing that really surprised me as well is they're playing basically two up top with him and Rashford. Mm. And Rashford and him, I don't know how many, I'd be interested to see how many passes they interchanged because they basically just don't have any.
Yeah.
They didn't seem to have much chemistry.
Yeah, yeah.
There didn't
true.
Seem to be much going on between them. You know, they are a strike partnership. And I think if you're going to be playing a strike partnership, it's important that there is some sort of chemistry there, something to work. Otherwise, you might as well not play the big man. You might as well go Martial, Rashford, because they have at least shown some sort of semblance of communication. Yeah. Whereas at the other end, I know it wasn't necessarily their best game, but I thought Hazard was excellent. And the link with him and Morata, when it gets going, is actually incredibly impressive. We saw it at Atletico. That was one of the big things that took out of it, is that when those two link up, Morata's a very intelligent player. And I did imagine, for the sake of my piece, I imagined what the situation would be if those two players were playing for the opposite clubs, which is what we expected to happen in, say, July. And Morata would, I think, fit probably far better, and mainly because he would be able to kind of think about these situations and create his own things, whereas Lukaku didn't really show much invention, I think, against Chelsea.
I think Lukaku is more instinctive in that way as a striker. Well, also, I mean, I was talking to someone from United last night about all this, and they're saying that one of the problems as well is that Mourinho sees Lukaku as a target man, but if you look at the two, at all the wingers they've got pretty much, they all like to cut inside, and none of them like to actually just get to the byline and cross, which is obviously why he so wanted Perisic. But then again, at that level, you've got to have a bit more to your attacking construct than that, and that idea, and if that doesn't happen, it falls. Same with the fact they've lost Pogba now. It's like, it seems like it's an excuse for all Mourinho says that he doesn't like to talk about injuries, even though he likes to talk about not talking about injuries all the time. There seems to be this excuse, oh, well, we don't have Pogba now, we have to just sit back completely. It's such a, you've got to offer a bit more.
It's true. Pogba is an important transitional player because he brings the ball forward through the phases. But I think the point about the attacking precision and stuff and the coaching is, Conte is this control freak, we know that. Like, if you are sat where we were sat, Mourinho is sat in his dugout, which is virtually below ground level, so you can't actually see that much. Conte's constantly up on the side. For the actual goal, Conte was screaming so much at Zappacosta, who couldn't hear him because of the crowd noise, but he was screaming so much at Zappacosta that he actually lost it. Like, he got to the point where he couldn't scream anymore. He got dragged his assistant out. His assistant screaming at Zappacosta, and all they're telling him is, stay wide, stay wide, stay wide, pointing to the touchline. Zappacosta eventually hears, pulls wide, and it pulls Antonio Valencia probably 3 yards to his left and just holds his position. Azpilicueta just kind of strolls into that space, swings a crossover. I don't know where the defenders were for the actual. I think Phil Jones gets caught out.
I think Morata had about 10 yards, like a radius of it.
But he's a wonderful header of the ball. He's probably the best header of the ball in the league. And I just thought the fact that Conte is pointing out that tiny little precise movement with such such anger almost is something that you never see Mourinho do in attack. And it's kind of indicative of the problems that either club are having.
Do you think that this season we're going to see a handful of very, very good performances from Chelsea rather than anything more consistent like we got last year?
It does feel like that, doesn't it? And it was something that Conte said after the Roma game, or sorry, before the Roma game, that we haven't found a consistency this season. And it's true, like, that's I think, one of the kind of, for all the debates about where Chelsea are in 2015-16 and all that, it's a huge mitigating factor, because there have been games where they've been very, very good, but it's almost, the issue is just sustaining it, which would speak to this problem of European football and how it's affected how they kind of prepare for games and that.
But do you think conversely, because they won't be able to have the consistency to mount a title challenge, they might in fact be better off focusing on the Champions League, where if they time their good performances at the right time, there's no reason they can't win it.
Didn't we?
That's true, yeah.
It
feels
a bit more like that. If you lack the depth, you're more likely to make a run in a knockout competition. Yeah, yeah. It's just a slight addition. I thought Anthony Taylor had a pretty poor game as ref. I thought it was pretty bitty.
Yeah.
Stopped the play a lot.
Yeah, I think after about half an hour, United got very, very physical, I thought, as well.
The own goal.
Valencia went in. Was it that challenge on?
Yeah, he smashed him. Absolutely smashed him. No, I thought the own goal as well, where he basically decided that a clumsy Phil Jones own goal was too clumsy even for Phil Jones.
Don't overthink it.
No. I didn't think it was. And you watch
Phil Jones can be that bad.
And there is a little push, right, but none more than usual. And basically, Phil Jones smashes it home as well. Like, you know, he gets a good connection on it.
Van Basten.
It was classic Phil Jones, who, as I say, in the end was caught out for the actual goal. I think we've probably done enough Chelsea United, considering the bigger deal, I suppose, is what happened at the Etihad, where Manchester City dismissed Arsenal, as, unfortunately, I think most people would have soundly predicted pre-match. The fact that it's becoming so predictable is ominous for everyone else.
The only issue with that game, that there were more mitigating factors for Arsenal than you would have expected, in that they could point to kind of, you know, or Wenger was going on, but Sterling, the supposed dive, then he was going on to the offside goal from David Silva. But yeah, still, on balance of play, there was by far the right winner.
Yeah, I mean, on another day, City would have been 4-0 up at half time. Mm. Like, they kept on getting in that first half. They got in behind so many times. There was the, you know, Aguero missed that chance in the near post that he'd score more often than not. There was the Sterling cross to Sané, which he overhit badly. Yeah.
There was good facial expression from Pep after that.
Yeah, I think that, some decisive moments did go in City's favour, but equally some decisive moments went in Arsenal's favour too. Mm. And on the balance, I don't think that City were any less dominant than you would expect them to be in that game.
I want to see where you two stand on Wenger. He picked Coquelin from the start. Then
his tactical trick.
Yeah, they're 2-0 down inside half an hour, was it? And then he takes off Coquelin, puts on Lacazette. And they do improve. They do get back in the game. So do we give him the credit for righting the wrong, as it were? But when we know that when Coquelin was in the team at the start, everyone was kind of asking, what on earth is he doing here? You were at the Emirates on Thursday night, Jack, for that incredible performance against Red Star. So, how does he justify picking Coquelin in that game?
Yeah, I mean, clearly Coquelin is nowhere near good enough to play for a team that wants to finish in the top four. He would look far more at home playing badly in defence midfield for a team in the relegation zone.
Is he relative to his status, as in he's got a relatively regular position in one of the top six teams? Is he the worst player in the league? Not necessarily the worst player in the league.
I tweeted before that he is the worst player in the Premier League. Lots of abuse from Arsenal fans. And yeah, I mean, I am joking, but coincidentally is also what I think. he obviously isn't good enough. And the problem is that he had those few good games when they brought him back from loan about 4 years ago. Which meant that they gave him a new contract. And of course, if they hadn't done that, then maybe they would have signed a better player.
He would have gone to Barcelona and been great
actually,
or something. But
when it comes to eventually writing the entire Wenger history, rather than what feels a bit of a zombie period in which the club is going on, that strange game where they won 2-0 at City with Coquelin as the absolute linchpin and kind of the tactical trump card. How is that going to be seen?
It's a mirage. I mean, but the thing is now, it's such a different city. You can't, it's almost, you know, it's classic. Wenger probably is still thinking about that game.
When he picks the
team to play against this Manchester City. This Manchester City, as we discussed probably last week, might be the first world-class team we've had in the Premier League since 2008 Man United.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a special footballing team, and they could come unstuck because you can see where the little cracks are. If you want to probe at those cracks, left-back's going to be a problem.
But it's also why, actually, more honestly for everyone else, that I think they'll be even better in the third. I mean, when we interviewed Robin...
Arjen Robin, yeah, as opposed to the singer Robin.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. In the head of Arsenal, by Munich, another great day for Arsenal, that one. He was going on about how just working with Guardiola, every season you just understand more and more, and the team got better. He felt the team got better and better despite perceptions, although they pretty came close to the Champions League Bayern that third season. And because the players just understand where to go more, those cracks will disappear because the movement is so much more fluid. I think that could be the case as the season goes on as well, and they get more confident in this football. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say, or getting ahead of ourselves, say they're the best team in Europe right now.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I agree that what Miguel said about Robin has been borne out by the evidence this season, in the sense that City already looked like a completely different team from last year. They're doing things which you wouldn't have expected them to do. They hold their position. They can interpret sort of complex Guardiola formations much better. Like yesterday, I mean, I was at Wembley yesterday. I only watched it on telly, but the City to me looked to be playing something vaguely similar to what they played when they won 1-0 at Chelsea, which is a kind of 3-4-3 with Kyle Walker almost tucking in as a centre-back and then Fabian Delph halfway between midfield and left-back. You wouldn't have expected those players to be able to play like that.
Johnny did a great piece last night. Johnny Liu, of course, our
chief sports writer.
That's the one. But in which you said the problem with playing City, if you're whoever has the ball, whichever team, they just give you a range of multiple choice problems, and it really is the variety to their play. You don't know, no matter who has the ball, there's always so many passing options, as we mentioned earlier with De Bruyne and Mkhitaryan in comparison. But also, any player can almost appear anywhere. This is going to just, we've got all these kind of whirlwinds all over the pitch, just this endless rotation, and it makes it so difficult to play against when they fully understand it. And it's a level of football beyond pretty much anything we've seen in the last 20 years, bar the other two Guardiola teams.
I think it's interesting as well. Ollie Kay wrote a good piece in the Times for Saturday, I think it was, where he was basically saying a lot of people are, to use the youthful parlance, hating on Guardiola City and Guardiola in particular, People do get very riled. Well done for dropping that. People do get very riled when you praise City because they spent a lot of money. Newsflash, lots of teams have spent lots of money and they're nowhere near this good.
I think there's a problem with that argument as well, because it takes almost as a starting point it's as if City have spent far more than everyone else. No, they're actually, there's at least two other clubs that could spend similar today, United and Chelsea.
But also they're spending... this is the point Ollie made quite well, I thought, is if you look at who they've spent the money on, there's been a lot of question marks when they've made these deals.
Yeah, yeah.
For example, De Bruyne was incredibly expensive for, at the time, and people thought, you know, that's a huge overspend for a Chelsea reject. I think the Mirror back page was, what a waste of money, in huge letters. And you know, he's been proven to be probably a bargain if that is possible at that price. Edison. Who on earth would have expected Edison?
Yeah, in fact, when he signed, a lot of him, it's going to be another Gladio Bravo, isn't it?
And I know he made a mistake the other day, but he's been excellent. You think he's the best keeper in the league, right, Jack?
No, even I think David De Gea is better than Edison. But no, I think Edison has been really impressive. It's very good for City to have a goalkeeper who actually makes saves. I know
it's a novel, isn't it?
He did screw up yesterday with the Lacazette goal and also the one from Iwobi, which he almost dropped
into the net.
Yeah,
which got pushed into the goal.
But before then, he did make a good save from Sanchez in the first half when it was still 1-0. He's big and strong. He's good off his line. His distribution is good.
And that's key.
And on that as well, actually, he's almost like a striker in the sense that if he makes a mistake, like the way a striker misses a chance, it doesn't affect him. He still kind of just keeps going. Yeah,
mentally strong.
You're right that it was a surprise. I mean, I know that even when City paid Benfica $35 million for him, I think, and this was at the time they were negotiating for Walker, and Tottenham, then when City paid that much for him, thought, well, they're willing to spend $35 million on him, then we'll up the price for Walker. Like, Tottenham thought it was a bad deal. So clearly there were a lot of eyebrows raised by that, but it looks like it's going to be completely vindicated.
And that's the point, is that so many of these deals that they've made, eyebrows have been raised. Kyle Walker, too much money. Leroy Sané, like, who is he? He's just a kid from Schalke or whatever. Sané looks like he could be one of the best. He's
so smooth,
technically brilliant. Like his movement is so smooth and so intelligent, and he's obviously been incredibly well coached throughout the youth.
He's also really good in the final third. That's the one thing with like young wingers is that you often think, well, they can beat four players, but they can't.
Very temperamental, yeah.
Yeah, like the goals and assists aren't there, but his efficiency in the final third is brilliant. It's much better than Sterling, who he's younger than.
In fact, he's almost getting a trademark finish, Sané, in that he's got that really straight, low shot just kind of slipped under the keeper.
Well, he's got the sort of Cristiano Ronaldo build, and I wonder if they can make him anything close to what Cristiano Ronaldo is. It's obviously a completely different sort of player to what they've got in Sterling.
Actually, what age is Sané now? He's 21.
I think he's 21, yeah, he's young.
Ronaldo was about 23 when he started to go properly up to another level. I actually think he's better than Ronaldo was. I mean, that's not to say that he's going to be as good a player as Ronaldo, but
Sané now is more efficient than Ronaldo was at his age.
Ronaldo was really, really frustrating then. It's actually kind of easy to forget that now.
But players peak at different ages. Yeah. I mean, but what you can say about City is City spent, 40, 50 million on Sané. Again, people raise their eyebrows. But if they have him for the next 7 years, 8 years, 9 years of his prime, it works out as an incredibly cheap deal. Mm. And he does look like he could be that player. So I think it's good to look back at these deals sometimes and appreciate that whoever is in charge of the transfers there, which is, you know, we know is a committee of people, really, Chiqui Baguirre staying at the top of that, that whoever's doing who's ever identifying these players and bringing them in is doing pretty well. Yeah. And that shouldn't be forgotten in all of this, but the City are 8 points clear. The other game on Sunday, which I wanted to touch on, was Spurs, Jack, because...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In a week where obviously the Real Madrid game is going to dominate, it would have been very easy to drop points against Crystal Palace. And you were there and it wasn't the greatest display, but they still got the 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, even putting the Real Madrid game to one side, remember they drew with Swansea and Burnley at home already this season. And then throwing on top of that the kind of hangover factor from Real Madrid, it's very easy to envisage how it could have gone wrong. And they were really poor. Like, this was the worst they've seen Tottenham play in ages. So probably the worst since those Burnley and Swansea games at home at the start of the season. They were slow. There were so many like overhit passes, you know, things like 1-2s that didn't come off, bad touches. They all looked a little bit tired, as they would be after such an exhausting run of games, a bit unfocused. And, you know, there was no Dele Alli, so they had to bring in Son. They brought in Danny Rose. They brought in Gazzaniga in goal. So it all felt slightly haphazard. And yet, they won the game because Heung-min Son scored a brilliant goal out of nowhere.
Excellent finish.
He's become one of their most important players in the world.
Yeah, he's
a very good player.
He does kind of give them... Sonny does give them like a kind of an extra edge, I think, up front. Yeah. Like he can be frustrating with his finishing, but he's very quick and he's good at running in behind. Mm. When his luck's in, he can be a good finisher. Mm. If that sounds a bit contradictory. Without him yesterday, I don't think they would have scored.
He's the most dangerous player.
They weren't really creating anything him aside. Kane looked tired. Mm.
He ran those channels quite well and kind of stretched Palace at a time when no one else was doing it. I think Palace's problem is obvious, is if Zaha doesn't win them the game, then they can't win a game.
Yeah.
He probably should have done, he probably could have done. He had that chance where he rounded Gazzaniga and then screwed it wide. And then you're thinking, if they really can't score with these chances, they're going to get punished for it. Because as strong as the defence looked all day, you're still thinking they're going to cough up one or two chances. I thought it was going to be someone like Llorente, but Son's finish was excellent. And I think for Spurs, when you're up there and you're trying to stay up there, and they're a team who I think people still sleep on as kind of a gate crasher, it's important to win the games where you don't actually play that well. And again, you know, I thought it was ripe for an upset because you've got a team who's rested against a team who's had to play against Real Madrid on Wednesday night, a third choice keeper. It's lots of rotation, but Spurs hold on.
On a wider point here, I think this is exactly why, and it's become controversial, why Pochettino's view on the League Cup and FA Cup is justified. I know, unfortunately for him, it's going to be until he has a trophy, it's going to be beaten over his head until he actually gets one. But ultimately, I think he basically just sees those trophies as, I mean, he's not going to say it outright, but it's a bit meaningless. And he wants one of the two bigger prizes, and he realises because Spurs are already, to compete at that level, Spurs are already very stretched to the maximum. So why would you kind of, you know, distort that then by diverting resources to something that you don't really value?
They effectively have a 15-man squad.
Yeah.
Pochettino likes a small squad rather than a big squad. And even then, over the course of Spurs' season, their squad always effectively seems to get smaller because there are players who Pochettino decides, actually, I don't fancy you anymore.
Yeah.
So it's like you say, it's incredibly hard to keep in the two hardest competitions with such a small group of players. And he's only going to make it harder for himself by overextending himself in the Carabao Cup.
When we were in the press room in Wembley after they got beaten by West Ham, we were actually joking. Did he skip into the room there?
I must say, I think that Tottenham are at least as likely to win the Champions League as they are to win the Premier League.
They're not likely to win the Premier League.
City are going to get 100 points. Or 95 points.
Do you think City could break Mourinho's record?
I think City will get into the 90s and Tottenham won't get into the 90s. But I think that in a knockout competition, like Tottenham are good enough to win the Champions League. And I actually think City would really not like to get Tottenham. Because they've got, Pochettino's got a really good record against Guardiola. They're one of the few teams who can outrun City.
Yeah.
They've got a magical player in Kane who can settle a game from 30 yards out of nowhere. And I don't know, they kind of have this, I think that,
I can see
them going surprising. I mean, they'll eventually tail off in the Prem, but I can see them going all the way in the Champions League.
It looks like we're going to have a lot of all English ties.
At some point.
Yeah.
We could easily have four or five English group winners.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Man United, Man City, quarter-final in the Champions League? Oh.
I was literally thinking of it as I came up the escalator, that how it could come to that. And actually, and again, just because of the nature of the Champions League, and also because of the nature of Mourinho's football in knockout games, I think they've got, similarly, a much better chance of winning the Champions League. I don't think United win the league, I don't have a chance now, but I wouldn't.
It would be a stonker. And also, Ken Early, who is obviously a good friend of yours, said earlier on today that...
That was a good tweet.
I thought that the Guardiola-Mourinho rivalry feels a bit like England-Germany, where only one side cares about it.
It was once relevant, and gradually it's because,
And there is sort of a feeling that kind of, you know, Pep probably doesn't care that much anymore, you know? Does he feel that threatened by Mourinho and United? Whereas
I imagine that Pochettino's got more under Pep's skin.
Yeah.
I think for sure,
But the Harry Kane team was stuff.
There was something simmering under there. I think you both said that you'd sensed before that there was a bit of mutual disdain there. And it's just kind of come to...
I remember the first time they met in England last October. Which actually when the first time that City's season, or when City's first season went off the rails a little bit, their winning run was finally broken. Spurs beat them 2-0. But before that game, we had a Poch's press conference. So we did a Sunday's bit afterwards. And like I said, the Sunday's bits are always smaller, obviously, because there was only three or four of us there. And because I was doing research, I had on my laptop a picture of the first time Poch and Pep met as managers, which is around 2009, and they're both in the camp now doing a photo shoot, both with held up the jerseys, and the two are standing there looking much younger. And we showed it to Poch, and he was a bit he was having banter about other aspects of when he was Espanyol manager, but not so much about that.
No, he's not enjoying getting filleted every week by Pep's Barcelona. I think the other thing to note with the way that Spurs are going is they've got the Champions League qualification done now, and they're probably going to win that group. Which doesn't necessarily even mean an easier draw these days, does it?
Because who's going to be second?
You've got two good teams in every group, virtually.
Well, who are going to be second place teams now? Likely Bayern, likely Real Madrid, you know, Spurs can't get them. Likely Juventus.
It's not exactly the blessing that you might have thought it was. But it's interesting to see them go deep, because this is a team where we kind of felt like they were going to be nearly men, sort of. Mm. Yeah, and at some point we're going to have to appreciate this is part of the top four. And it's like I did say this after the Chelsea United result, there is a gap now. Arsenal, Liverpool, and someone else are on. Is it Burnley? Are on like 19, and I think it's a 4-point gap to the others on 23, yeah. 23, 20.
I think Liverpool could close that though. I've had this feeling for a while, but I think United could.
Liverpool
could get into a situation like last season.
Liverpool are so flawed as a team. Now, obviously, it's great to come up against West Ham because.
But the one thing I would say about Liverpool is Mane makes such a massive difference, especially when they have Mane and Salah.
Mane and Salah are phenomenal.
Because even if the defence is still suspect, the very fact of having Mane there means you always have to think about him, which means the opposition's all they can't go forward as much as they want, because that would just leave space for Mane.
Salah and Firmino and Mane as a front three, I think, are brilliant. And they help you defensively because people don't test you as much. In the same way that Man City's kind of left-back issue hasn't really been tested by anyone yet, because no one's good enough to actually keep them on the back foot. But playing against West Ham is like walking through an open door at the moment. We think David Moyes is going to come in there.
I think it's almost certain, to be honest.
Almost certain.
Although I was on BBC SO, Phil Neville, and he basically outright said he will not be Moyes' assistant. He wants to be number one.
P-Nev out. Yeah. I think Phil Neville might... I've got a feeling that he might leave coaching behind after, you know. I get the impression he didn't really enjoy Valencia or...
He wants to be a number one manager, he said.
Yeah, I know, but I don't think anyone's going to hire him. I think he's a nice guy. I think he's a really nice guy. Like, as I say, it's just... It hasn't necessarily worked that well for him so far. I think the Man United...
He's happier than Gary, isn't he? He just seems like he's not as...
I'm not going to say what I want to say. I'll do that off air. But I think he's a really nice guy. But this would have been an interesting job for him, because the problem was at Valencia, like he was working with his brother, which is obviously a weird thing. And then the club was a complete disaster. So neither of them had a chance. At Everton, at United, he was part of the post-Fergie disaster.
Yeah.
You know, so he's never actually had a real crack at anything fairly.
Maybe at West Ham
would have been the best opportunity for him. But I just don't see where at the moment he's going to get the chance. Maybe, you know, with Allardyce at Everton, if that happens, you know, that him and Craig Shakespeare as assistants or something, it would work. But what do we think about Moyes? Because I understand West it's going to be a short-term deal, right?
If they appoint him, I think West Ham are going down.
You think they are?
Yeah. Now, I've heard basically that Moyes now is determined to... He realises this could be a last chance, that like the last two jobs, the last three jobs were really smashed his reputation. Yeah. I think there'll be a bit of fire about him again. And I think West Ham are banking on that in terms of they can both mutually re-energise each other. But
and then part ways in the summer, do we think?
He can only be a guy to try and keep them up rather than long-term. The one thing they do need the most is organisation, basically.
Yeah.
Ahead of anything else. Like the players are not disastrously bad. The players are fine. But they need... Slaven Bilic is not exactly Mr. Organisation. They just need someone to kind of sort them out briefly and give them a bit of medicine.
I think the squad, as ever, is overpaid and bloated with West Ham. Yeah. But it is fine. It's of a standard that shouldn't be going down.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're right, some organisation would make all the difference. But it's one of those things where I think it's wise to get him until the end of the season, if you think he's good enough to keep you up, that is. Because in the summer, you can hire someone half decent. But unless you're in the lucky situation Liverpool in a couple of years ago where Jurgen Klopp happens to be on a sabbatical, you don't get good managers at this time of year because they're not out of jobs. Mm. The only exception would be Thomas Tuchel, who presumably has laughed them out of the room.
I think that West Ham's reputation is such that I don't think they could get a good manager. On paper, they should be able to get someone good because they play in the Premier League in London and a massive stadium and overpay as a matter of course. However, I think that, I know that lots of managers in English football, European football, don't particularly want to work with them because they know the reputation of David Sullivan and David Gold. You know, for example, when they were informally meeting managers last year when they were considering slacking Slaven Bilic at the end of last season, they had informal meetings with David Wagner and Marco Silva. And the person in those meetings who asked the most questions was Jack Sullivan.
I'm quite intrigued, actually, to have the meeting between the West Ham owners and David Wagner. Different personalities.
Jurgen Klopp also warned David Wagner against taking the job.
The other thing I think is interesting with those guys is how Sullivan and Gold will shamelessly take the credit for every good signing that happens, and then when there's a bad one, they just wash their hands of it. Yeah. It's like
publicly.
It's comical, really. But yeah, I think, you know, he'll organise that team, whether he keeps it, because that Sunderland team was so bad. But you wonder if, I think Sunderland as a club was more screwed than West Ham are. I don't get the impression that they're completely dead.
The one thing about this is if and where we were expecting to get the job, what I think is going to be very interesting is the immediate atmosphere and attitude that Moyes takes. Because one of the huge problems is Sunderland, basically, he went into a job, and fair enough, he was absolutely correct in saying, yeah, we're in a relegation battle and playing everything down because things were that bad. But it just immediately, like, it just added to the doom of it all. I'm going to write, well, this is done.
Situations where he by being realistic and honest, he actually made things worse for himself.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sometimes in management and in life, you need to be unrealistic and kind of bullshy and brash. And Moyes is none of those things.
Yeah, yeah.
And by seeing things clearly and describing them as he saw them, he actually made the situation much worse for himself.
Oh, no.
And that's why I always tell Miguel that his work is excellent.
Yeah. Well, if anything, playing it down.
Yeah. that is enough Premier League talk. Next week, we've obviously got international break. Miguel, you won't be here next Monday, will you?
I'll be in Copenhagen on Saturday for the Irish game, and then in Dublin on Monday for the Tuesday return leg.
Plucky Minnows Island.
I'll be in Basel for Switzerland, Northern Ireland.
Oh, sounds painful for Basel.
It's actually an international break I'm quite excited by, I have to say.
Well, this is. I mean, the problem is that all we do is mercilessly criticise the international break because it's rubbish, but this is the one every couple of years is actually good, because this is one with actual World Cup qualification on the line.
It almost feels like, you know, apologies to all golf fans listening, but as a kind of a fair weather golf fan, it's almost one of those things like when there's a major, you kind of endure the first 3 days and, all right, you know, we've invested all this time in it. All these shots mean something now, and it feels like that would be a bit like the international qualifiers. You've gone through all the kind of the setup games, and now finally we've got this is where all the consequence is.
There's only so many times you watch Spain beat Liechtenstein 13-0.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, this is the good bit. I know England have got some glamour friendlies against Germany and Brazil, but those really aren't that interesting compared to Ireland, Denmark, or Switzerland, Northern Ireland, where you're going to see the hopes and dreams of one nation crushed, and the excitement of getting to play in a World Cup.
And you could see it, especially in the last round of internationals, especially in South America. But that's what it comes down to. No matter, for all the debates about the quality of the football compared to the club game, it's the club game can rarely match the emotion of these matches and kind of the stakes and the line. For someone knows, you can hear from the accent, obviously. For Ireland, who haven't qualified for World Cup since 2002. All right, we've got the last two Euros.
There's a good book about the 2002 World Cup with Ireland, I believe.
Well, more so actually about Ireland's qualification here as well, 1986 to 2002. Stuttgart, Saipan, it's called by someone close to home here.
Good. Thanks. So, enjoy your trip. Be good. I would just like to thank whoever it was, by the way, because we don't actually know who did this, who nominated us for the Football Supporters Federation Award, for which we are nominated, as I mentioned at the top of the show. You can go online and vote. Now, we're likely to not win the vote because other people have mounted cynical publicity campaigns to try.
Don't worry, I've set up a bot to vote for us over and over and over again. We're getting millions of votes.
I emailed Donald Trump to try and get hold of some of those Russian bots to win us this vote, but he hasn't replied as of yet. Apparently, he's busy.
We're the Pochettino Spurs up against the kind of the Guardian type.
We're plucking outsiders, but we're still mainstream. There's a couple on there which are independent.
Big spending Guardian.
Yes, well, you know, and the Guardian Football Weekly Light, whatever it's called now. So both of those are probably going to beat us for votes. Why are you laughing so much? They're going to beat us for votes. But we'd like to thank you all for listening, and whoever nominated us, and whoever might go to find the website now and vote for it. I mean, I probably should have prepared with an actual URL. But in the meantime,
also
just make
vote
sure.
For Jonathan Liu.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny, who you obviously hear on here on a regular basis is up for Writer of the Year because he's one of the best writers there is. So if you could vote for either of us, that'd be great. If you could subscribe, rate and review the podcast on iTunes as ever, we're very thankful. So from award-nominated producer Matt Murphy, award-nominated chief football writer Miguel Delaney, from award-nominated Man About London Town, Jack Pitbrook, and from award-nominated me, goodbye.